Welcome once again to A Pain in the Glass podcast. This is Bill Shearhart, National Coach with Curling Canada, once again coming to you from Sydney in supernatural British Columbia on the ancestral land of the Wasanek First Nations. A Pain in the Glass podcast is sponsored by Canada Curling Stone of Comoca, Ontario. Well, it's that time of the year. And I'm not talking about playoffs for curling. I'm also talking about playoffs for minor hockey. In 1998, one of the excellent sports columnists in Canada, Steve Simmons, penned an article that he called, well, it's the title of this episode, I Hope They Didn't Bring Apple Juice. Here is what he wrote. There was about 2 minutes to play in the playoff game, and I was anxiously pacing behind the bench, barking out whatever instructions seem important at that very moment. You watch the game, and you watch the clock in those final seconds, sometimes precisely at the very same time. We were up by a goal, poised to advance to the next round of the playoffs, when I felt a tug on my jacket. Coach, one of my players said on the bench. Yeah, I answered, concentrating more on the game and the clock than on him at that instant. Are there any snacks today? What? I barked, exasperated. Did anyone bring snacks today? Huh? I said as I looked away. I hope they didn't bring apple juice, the young boy said. I don't like apple juice. The moment froze me in all the playoff excitement, the way all special and meaningful moments should. If somehow I could have captured that conversation on tape, I would have had one of those special sporting moments for parents everywhere, the kind you need to play for coaches and executives and trainers and managers and all of us who take youth sports way too seriously. It isn't life or death, as we like to think it is. It isn't do or die, as often as we pretend it to be. In one tiny moment, in one game, youth hockey was reduced to what it is really all about. Apple juice. Okay, so it's not apple juice, but what apple juice happens to represent in all of this. The snack. The routine, the ritual. Kids can win and lose and not even give a second's thought about either. But don't forget the post-game drinks. If anyone will spoil a good time, it's that. You see, it's all part of the culture of hockey. Not who wins, not who scores goals, not which team accomplished what on any given night, but whether mom and dad are there, whether their grandparents are in the stands watching. When you get involved in hockey, when you truly put your heart into the game and into the environment and into everything, it can be when it's at its best. You see, the game is only part of the package. It becomes a social outing for parents. It becomes a social outing for children. It should never be about who is going for extra power skating and who is going straight from mites to the Ottawa Senators, but about building that kind of environment, the kind of memories kids and parents and families will have forever. Sometimes, when I stand around arenas, I can't believe the tone of the conversations I hear. The visions are so short-sighted. The conversations are almost always about today, and who won, and who lost, and who scored. Not enough people use the word fun, and not enough sell it that way either. Hard as we try to think like kids, we're not kids. Hard as we try to remember what we were like when we were young, our vision is clouded by perspective and logic. Something not always evident with children. Ask any parent whether they would rather win or lose, And without a doubt, they would say, well, win. But ask most children what they would prefer. Playing a regular shift with power play time and penalty killing time on a losing team rather than playing sparingly on a winning team. And the answer has already come out in two different studies. Overwhelmingly, kids would rather play a lot and lose than win while playing very little. They would rather strap on their hockey equipment and start playing than be champions. Like I said, it is about apple juice. It is, after all, about the experience. You can't know what's in a kid's mind. I was coaching a team a few years ago when I got a call from the goaltender's father. It was the day before the championship game. The father told me his son didn't want to play anymore. Any more that afternoon, I asked? No, the father said. He just doesn't want to play anymore. Did something happen, I asked? He won't tell me, the father said. I hung up the phone and began to wonder how this happened and who would play goal the next day when I decided to call back. Can I talk with him? I asked the father. The goalie came on the phone. I don't want to play anymore, he said. But you know what tomorrow is, don't you? Are you nervous? No. Then what? You can tell me. I don't like it anymore. Don't like playing goal? They hurt me, he said. Who hurts you? The guys, he said. What guys? Our guys. They jump on me after the game. It hurts me and scares me. Is that it? Yeah. Do you trust me? Yeah. What if I told you they won't jump on you and hurt you anymore? Would you play then? Are you sure? I'm sure. Then I'll play. And that was the end of the goalie crisis. The young man was scared and wouldn't tell his parents. He loved playing, but he didn't love being jumped on after winning games. You can't anticipate anything like that as a coach. You can't anticipate what's going on in their minds. It's their game. We have to remember that. It's not our game. They don't think like we do, or look at sport like we do. They don't have to adjust to us. We have to adjust to them. We have to make certain we're not spoiling their experience. Our experience is important too, but the game is for the children and not for the adults. We can say that over and over again, but the message seems to get lost every time. Lost in too many coaches who lose perspective and who think nothing of blaming and yelling and bullying. Lost by parents who think their son or daughter is the next this or that, and they are already spending the millions their little one will be earning by the time they finish hockey in the winter, 3-on-3 in the summer, power skating over winter break, special lessons over March break, pre-tryout camp before the AAA tryouts in May, and a couple weeks of hockey school just to make certain they don't get rusty. I have asked many NHL players how they grew up in the game. My favorite came from Trevor Linden, who has captained more than one team. He said he played hockey until April and then put his skates away. He played baseball all summer until the last week of August. He went to hockey camp for 1 week, then began his season midway through September with tryouts. No summer hockey. No special schools. No skating 12 months a year. I didn't even see my skates for about 5 months a year, he said. I think the kids today are playing way too much hockey, and all you have to do is look at the development to see it really isn't producing any better players. We have to let the kids be kids. When I asked Gary Roberts, did he think he had a future in hockey? When I got a call from an agent before the OHL draft, he said, Before that, it was just a game we played. Do me a favor. Until the agent comes knocking on your teenager's door, let's keep it that way. A game for kids. Oh, and one reminder. I don't care at what age. Don't forget the snacks. You see, apple juice matters. In his article, of course, Steve was talking about hockey, but you can insert any sport into that narrative. And of course, for us, it could be curling. The game is for them. It is not for us as coaches. It is not for us as parents. It is not for anyone else but the youngsters. My grandsons, Jacob and Lucas, those of you who are regular listeners to a Pane in the Glass podcast, have heard their voices. And in the winter, they're curlers and they're hockey players. Hockey takes up the greater amount of time. They are 2 years apart in age, which puts them into two different age categories. My younger grandson, Jacob, and his team have been pretty successful in terms of the W's and the L's. The elder grandson, Lucas, and his team, well, not so much. But I will always remember and be so proud of Lucas the first time that they won a game, and it was well into this season. And I went up to him expecting to see a great big smile and a glow in his eyes, and well, that's not what I saw. And I asked him, I said, Lucas, you won the game. Well, what's the matter? And he said, Grandpa T, I feel sorry for the other team. And I paused for a second and thought, okay, he feels sorry for the other team. Oh, I asked for an explanation. And he looked me in the eye and he said, Grandpa T, I know what that feels like. I know what that feels like. The longtime coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes, Urban Meyer, would, upon going to the home of a recruit, and of course now we're talking about college-age athletes, a prospect for his varsity football team at Ohio State. And he would always ask the parents a very interesting question. He would say, what other sports does he play? You see, he didn't want athletes with tunnel vision, just one sport where everything about that sport was so important to that young man's life and in the extended family as well. So, two asides. We'll conclude this episode with the words of a friend and colleague, Martin Kavanaugh, of his World of Coaching on Facebook. Martin is a chartered professional coach with an advanced coaching diploma, and he made these 5 points that can cause athletes to lose their love of a sport. Number one, negative coaching. Completely in the control of the coach. Develop a style that works for the athletes in your program. Number two, constantly losing. Coaches must learn to create victories in practice. I really like that one. Number three, making the game too complex. Games, strategies, and skills can be complex, but when leaders or coaches make the game too complex before they teach athletes to love the game, it may overwhelm the athletes. Great leaders and coaches have the ability to take complex concepts and make them appear simple. Number four, mental and physical fatigue. The same game, same muscle groups year round. What was fun at age 9 is often forced labor at older ages and stages of development. Keep your athlete fresh by encouraging a variety of activities and interests. And number five, outside pressure. parents and coaches who push too hard may be placing too much emphasis on winning. Those who attempt to live out their sports dreams through their children, or who withdraw love and affection after failure to perform well, causes athletes to lose confidence and or hate competition. Martin's third point about complexity and simplicity reminded me, and I'm going to paraphrase, I tried to see the exact words here, but I couldn't find them, but it went something like this, that we as humans take very simple activities, i.e. sports, and make them very complex, and then by working so hard, we make what's complex look very simple and very easy. As I said, or words to that effect. So, again, thank you very much for joining me today behind a pane in the glass. We've had a number of episodes of late that were fairly lengthy, so I decided today was the day to give your ears a rest, so I've tried to keep it under the 20-minute mark. It is that time of year, as indicated, when playoffs are looming and you're engaged in playoffs, and you know, remember what sports is all about. Whether you're a participant or a family member or a friend, let's keep it in perspective. This episode of Behind the Pane in the Glass podcast is being published on March the 18th. It's a Saturday, my usual publication day. Last night, in one of the first rounds of the National Collegiate Athletic Association Men's Basketball Tournament, commonly known as March Madness, a 16th-ranked team defeated a number one-ranked team. It's only the second time in the history of that tournament that that's ever happened. The odds of that happening are astronomical, as you might guess. Fairleigh Dickinson University, relatively small university, and ironically, of the 68 teams in the event where height does make a difference, the average height of that team was number 68. On the Purdue team that was ranked number one in their region, they have a player who is 7'4" tall, and a very good player. And a wonderful young person. But the basketball didn't know that. The basketball floor didn't know that. The basket didn't know that. But the players on Fairleigh Dickinson University knew one thing, taken from Frederick Bachman's book, Beartown, where author Bachman writes, "When the desire to win is stronger than the fear of losing, you have a chance." Let me repeat that. When the desire to win is stronger than the fear of losing, you have a chance. And that's exactly what happened last night. Thank you very much for taking some time from your day to join me behind a pane in the glass. It is always my pleasure to research some topics, and over the past couple of days, I have Zoomed with three individuals for upcoming episodes I think you will find very interesting. So until next time, which will be 1 week from today, wherever you are, good curling, please stay safe, and of course, think only those happy thoughts.